my one thing over the past 15 to 20 years has really been centered around this idea of what did Jesus mean when he said, I came to proclaim good news to the poor.
From the Atypical Podcast, it's the One Thing series. Discussions with dreamers, doers, thinkers, and catalysts, where they tell their story as well as the one thing that shaped their life or work and made them who they are. What is that belief or epiphany or occurrence in their life that so entrenched itself that it changed their trajectory? I'm Matt Mooney.
And I'm Jenny Mooney.
And this is The One Thing. Have you ever got something stuck in your head like cannot get it out, can't escape it? And then, well, although the answer may not be forthcoming, the very question begins to shape how you see the things around you. Our guest, Mike Rush, will walk us through how this one question rolling around in his head ultimately changed everything.
You know, how do we get anywhere, I guess, in some ways? I think part of it is coming to a place where, number one, whatever theological framework we're working in, number one, just stops working for us for whatever reason that is. I think the second thing is really coming to a place where you're confronted with some truths that you don't know how to deal with, that don't really fit into whatever paradigm you're trying to live life through. And so it was November, it was a Thanksgiving service at church. We were sitting there, and I think while I wouldn't have been able to articulate it at the time, I think the theological paradigm that I was living in had really probably run its course. And there was this idea that was presented in this Sunday after Thanksgiving service, which was pretty simple. It was, hey, if everybody had $5, we could, and gave that, and there was probably a room full of, you know, 1,000 people in it. If everybody had $5, we could fund every missions project that needed to be funded, and it'd be taken care of. And if everyone had one extra coat that they could bring, and we could give that to one of the local homeless shelters, we would be able to provide the warmth and the clothing necessary and needed to meet the need in our community. And so me, I'm just kind of a black and white, okay, let's do that. Here's my $5, here's my coat. And there really was nowhere to give my $5 and nowhere to put my coat. And so this idea of good news to the poor, when Jesus is asked, the first thing he leads with in his whole public ministry is, I've come to proclaim good news to the poor. And I think in those moments, you're just confronted with this reality of, is good news to the poor just words? Is it just actions? Or actually, is it this idea that there's somewhere in between them that it's both? And where one, I think, this idea of words, and we're dealing with our souls, and we're dealing with the people that we are, and the other one where we're meeting physical needs, and we're dealing with the body, that you come to this place where I think in maybe the world that I live for so long, good news to the poor was restrained or constrained to this space of really restoration or salvation for the soul, without consideration for what that actually meant for the physical body. Yet the person that we followed of Jesus came in body and soul. And so you're confronted with this duality that the body and the soul are not two different things. And so I think it was in this space where kind of all of those walls just came crashing together, where the theological framework that I was living in, which was really constrained to what we would call the soul or salvation, just kind of came crumbling down, not to invalidate that, but maybe to show the limits that that there was more to what we were actually supposed to do. And if you look at Luke chapter 4, it says, you know, the Spirit of the Lord has come upon me and anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor, to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, and set at liberty those who are oppressed, and to claim the year of the Lord's favor. And so, but there's a lot of caring for the body in those spaces, a lot of going into places of the underside of power for those that are oppressed. There's a lot of intentionality. Those are not happenstance. Those are not accidents. And then Jesus folds up the scroll and he sits down, and that's it. And that's all he has to say about it. And so it just sent us into this place, my wife and I, into this journey of starting to ask some questions about what did this mean and how did that practically work itself out in the world.
So take us a little bit, Mike, on that journey. And you're a friend of mine. You're on our board at 99 Balloons.
Yes.
So you're not
thankful.
Just somebody I'm asking questions of, but you're somebody that I know and that whose life I follow. And so I know that this has played out in your life a lot of ways. But before we jump to where you are now or where you've come, I want you to your wife's name is Corey. I'm a big fan of Corey.
I'm a fan.
Take me, as you should be.
I am
too. Not as big a fan as you because that could get awkward, but I do like Corey. So take me on just a little bit of that journey from that day. No place to give a coat, no place to give $5. We were just talking. We didn't mean it. Mike, you thought they meant it, you know? And so just two kind of follow-ups on my end. Why is it, Mike? I don't think there's many people listening, period. I don't think there's many.
They certainly won't be after that introduction, but thank you.
I don't think there's many people listening that that disagree with what you're saying. Like, you don't hear the concepts that you're saying very often and get a big boo, hiss, hiss. However, I think you and I both think this is a real struggle area for those who profess to believe that we say we want to do things, you know, and that's actually what we're doing is we're saying it. We're struggling with implementing of the doing. So one, just why is this hard for us when we nod our head and amen? And I think we agree. I think it resonates with us about why Jesus came and who he is. Maybe not with everybody, but I think with most. And then what is the journey forward for you and Corey? Take us on that just a little bit.
Sure. And I think it's what we witnessed or what we experienced was really required, really the pulling apart of these elements of faith from these elements, honestly, of our culture. And that, which is a very dangerous thing. Like, you have to be really careful the questions you ask. And we were asking questions really out of the honest desire to understand, but can really be interpreted as the tearing down of one thing without maybe the reconstruction of another thing, because we weren't capable of doing both of those things at the same time. So it probably felt like to a lot of people that there was just a deconstruction.
You were just coming in, whacking away, tearing something up, not with anything to replace it necessarily yet.
Right.
And so when you say that's a dangerous thing, what do you mean?
Yeah, I think institutions do a really good job of creating structures to protect themselves. And I don't know that's always intentional, but we come face to face with the reality that anything that would take the bigness of our culture, right? Our culture and our value set is this fierce independence, liberty, of growth, of bootstrapping, of anybody can become anything, which is this inherent projection or posture towards bigness and greatness and success equals all of those things. And so we should never be surprised when our institutions that we've created follow those same trajectories. Yet the idea from a faith standpoint that we're following is actually inherently opposite of that. We all know that. And so when you start going against the grain and you start breaking things down into maybe what I'm doing doesn't need to be big and to be great and to be known, and it just needs, and it doesn't have to be impacting 1,000 people or 10,000 people. When we start to go the other direction, it starts to create waves and create ripples. And not in a way most people can even understand. We just know that going against the trajectory of our culture sometimes is going to create waves that a lot of people have never been confronted with or wouldn't expect you to think. And so it turns into this idea that it's not about, well, if it's not going to be big and it's not going to be great, then certainly God can't be in that. Which to me never seemed to align. And so we really kind of moved from that place into maybe it doesn't need to be big and maybe it doesn't need to be great and maybe we don't have to have our act together. And maybe at the end of the day, there's a holiness in just serving the other in a very small, very unknown way. And this was a little bit before social media, and I'll date myself a little bit. But it was this idea that could we find a place to practice these things or to really even understand these things in a way that wasn't about us. And so we took a journey not too far from where we live as a center that deals with the sexual exploitation of children. And as a part of their work, they have a small home there that that houses women and children who have been victims of assault or abuse. And so we showed up and we said, hey, I have no idea how to solve that problem. I can't even get my head around it. It's just something that I don't know. I am utterly incapable of being able to solve that problem. And so we showed up and we talked to the executive director and we said, hey, if we bring our small group out once a month, we'll come out the first Saturday of every month. We'll do whatever you need us to do, paint, cut the grass, move rocks from one pile to the next pile. If that frees up time and money so that you can go spend that time and money in freeing children from sexual exploitation and abuse, we felt like that was a good thing. And so we did that. And we told stories and we tried to understand and we just showed up and we just showed up and we just showed up. And I'll remember very clearly one day we were in we'd probably been doing this for 6 or 7 months. And, you know, the initial passion and energy was probably fading a little bit. And now we're just doing work, right?
Imagine that. I wouldn't understand that.
Our spasms of passion had really, you know, started to subside. And we are now just doing work, which maybe at the end of the day is really what it's all about, you know. But I'm standing in this room and we're moving a bed from one room to the other. And it was, and then on the outside, we were clearing all this overgrown bushes and just trees and vines away from the house. And I was probably grumbling about something because, you know, it wasn't making me happy or whatever. The director came in and he said, Mike, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know. We're just clearing all this stuff up. Someone should have taken care of this. It should have never gotten this bad. And he said, come here, come with me. And he put his hand on my shoulder and he brought me into the next room and we looked out the window and he said, Mike, what do you see? And I'm like, well, we cleaned all that up. So now I can see out the window and I can see the valley and it's beautiful. And he goes, no, you're missing it. And I said, what do you mean? And we walked back into the other room where the windows were still covered by all these trees. And he said, you see, what you're actually doing is you're providing security and safety that when an abused woman and her child look out the window, they know that no one is there. And right now, if I were to stay in this room and I can't see out the window, I live in fear because the idea that someone may be there. And it absolutely wrecked me and broke me. Because it wasn't about this one thing of just doing work. It was actually about something so much greater and so much deeper that then this work of the body, of serving, of showing up and doing a service project was actually around the work of the soul, right? And so I think that's where it all starts to now, this process of deconstruction, that was probably like the first 2x4 of starting to put some things back together. Because now it started to make sense. When we talk about liberty for the captives, liberty for the captives of sexual exploitation and abuse looked a lot like clearing a bunch of brush and vines away from an overgrown house.
And so as you continue to love that story and as you continued down this road of really just a good news for the poor, that Jesus proclaimed, and you begin to, as you say, deconstruct the idea of the spiritual box over here and the physical box over here, the body and the soul. How does that play out today, Mike, in your life? Where have you come? Because we're fast forwarding a lot of life. Yeah. And I know you're active in a lot of things, and you're not someone that loses that passion in the seventh month, because you're way further in than that. And you and I have together watched people lose that passion.
Absolutely.
In the world that we occupy. We've seen that need that you step into when you peel away those and you begin to step into those small places. It's real messy. It's real ugly and it's real heavy. And you and I have both also, seen people crumble under that weight, for which we totally understand. No, we don't. We don't. We don't.
It's a real thing.
We don't wonder how that happens. Yeah. We wonder how it doesn't happen. And so, you know, as you and Corey, if that was the first part of kind of that deconstruction, I want you just to tell me where you're at now, how you live out those realities now, and what you get to be a part of in the many roles that you play in some great works.
Yeah, so that 10 or 15 year journey has been a long one, filled with landmines and ditches and crises of faith and construction and reconstruction and an ongoing process of trying to come to where we are today. And I would say it's not over. It's not. This will probably be where we live life for the rest of our time, right? Today it looks a lot like trying to walk quietly behind what we just affectionately called giants. And I think we have been lucky enough to be able to start to understand, number one, just the reality of poverty in the world, the reality of exploitation, the reality of vulnerability in the world. I think we've been confronted through our stories, through our journeys, through our travels, through the work we've been doing, probably a pretty solid understanding of what that looks like. And our heart and soul has been we can't fix all of that. But we know that there are people that are working in certain spaces around the world that are addressing what I would just consider some of the most difficult problems in the world. And yes, you're my host today, but I would absolutely consider the work of 99 Balloons, what you and Jenny are doing, as part of that, that there's a work here, and for whatever reason, there's a calling on your life to move into these spaces, whether you asked for it or not. That's where you are, and it's where you're going, and it's where you've chosen to live your life. And so our goal has been, and our desire has been, how do we help support the people who are really forging ahead into those spaces that are really, really hard? And sometimes we do it well, and sometimes we don't, but I think we've been able to find a community of people that first and foremost, personally, we can serve and come alongside and say, what does it look like to keep you in the game, to keep doing what you're doing? What does it look like to help sustain those efforts? What does it look like to collaborate and bring people into those networks that can help push those ideas forward? And I think it's always been centered around what we would consider sometimes the most vulnerable, or those spaces that have been overlooked. When you talk about families with children with special needs, for example, like some people that are just off the radar of our care every day. Like, how do we, and Matt, you've taught me this, how do we, when we think about what does it look like to live an inclusive life, and we think about all people belonging to our community in a way that's inclusive, like it's a radical idea. It's a radical idea that I think sometimes our culture, and maybe not knowingly, but often can overlook. And we think about chronically homeless people, 2 miles from here, 3 miles from here, there's a space in the woods where about 150 people have been living for years with mental illness and dependency issues and physical problems that have kept them living in literally worse than a third world country. How do we go and help in those spaces? Or we think about violence against women around the world. Women are probably some of the most oppressed people in the world, largely. And so how do we start to think about the equal rights and the things that the opportunities that must be created to go and help? And so I think these are places where we've been able to go and serve through some really beautiful, amazing organizations. Professionally, we've been lucky enough to be able to be a part of a organization, Pure Charity, that works with nonprofits around the world to help with fundraising and kind of operational work. And so this idea of walking behind giants has been the joy of, I think, our lives. Has been, there are some giant, amazing leaders and people in this world who would never consider themselves that. And I think our place has been, how do we come alongside, or how do we support very quietly? I have no desire to stand on a stage or write a book. I've never got good grades in English. But and so I think it's been really that idea of, how do we find a place where we can go and make it not about us, where we can be effective in the work we're doing, but maybe at the end of the day, the outcome is something really holy and beautiful.
Well, you certainly should write a book, and you certainly don't have to have good grades. I mean, can't let
it go. Do you
know
any good ghost writers? That would be.
Yeah, I think
the answer would be no.
No,
I said a good one. We need a good one.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Inside joke there. But, well, Mike, I certainly appreciate just who you are and the words that you have to say. And I have, about 9,000 questions that I'd like to ask you here towards the end. I think I'll narrow it down to three. And one of those questions being, as you and I have kind of been in this, I don't even know what to call the space. I don't like any word that we could come up with it. You know, if it's social justice or, you know, whatever, you turn off half of whatever people listening with whatever you call it. So get over yourself. But we've been in this space and we've walked this road of serving, of being surrounded by people trying to solve problems, trying to love people in really messy situations. So I think my first question is for, like, if I am somebody listening and that's not my world, right? Like, my world is not that. And at one time I was there.
Sure.
And God brought me into the world that I get to serve in. I think you would just poured out exactly the same scenario. God pulled you into what he was doing and you didn't even understand it.
Right.
But what would you say to the person whose life is not intersecting need on a daily basis, weekly basis, and maybe in a passing of a car? Like, that's as close as they really feel that need. And so I think, you know, so many of us in this culture, that might be kind of what we aspire to. I think you spoke to that a little bit. What would you just say to that person on why it should be different than that?
I think there's maybe two things. I don't understand it. I don't know why. I don't know if this is a flaw. I think it may be a flaw, and actually maybe some sort of holy design. But we were not created to live as isolated people. I think deep within all of us, if we're really honest, there's this posture towards community, which is a very generic word and means everything and nothing at the same time. But it with this idea that we look at the life of, if you're a person of faith, like this idea that Jesus's trajectory was always to bring in the other. And for some reason, that trajectory always went to the farthest, most extreme examples of need to be included into whatever this idea of community or fellowship or whatever word you want to use actually means. And so I think by definition of that, it causes us to say, hey, if we're not regularly, or if we don't have a place where we're interacting with the other, of which you hear described as the stranger and the refugee and the person who's a different skin color or a different ethnicity or someone who's speaks a different language or is from a different country or a different economic place or someone with different physical abilities. If we're not regularly putting in our space or in our lives to create spaces for that, you need to be open to the face that you may be missing or selling yourself short of the definition of what that idea of community and wholeness really looks like. And so I think we have to in many ways start there. I think secondarily, in this idea of what I've heard other people, and I'll just steal their terms, they use this idea of what we would consider human flourishing, that at the highest level of our human need is this desire to actually give back to others. And we think about the scale of human needs from, I need water, I need air, I need shelter, I need security, I need education, I need job training, I need, like, this idea of the ever escalating ability for people to flourish, that the highest need is to give back. And I don't know why we're like that. I don't know why we're programmed. Program is probably the wrong word, but I would say why in our souls or in our ideas that this idea of helping others is actually maybe the top of that idea of flourishing. And so sometimes I've seen it over and over and over again that people will be within their networks, within their communities, and there's a discontentment. And we try to fill it with things, and we try to fill it with experiences, and all of those things will work for a time period. But really the next step, and sometimes we've said this to a lot of people, like, what does it look like to serve the least of these? And to go and to put yourself in places that are intentionally uncomfortable, that are out of your element. Because I think at the end of the day, what you find is that God is there. And maybe for me and for my family, I know that maybe when I'm not 100% certain what I should be doing, or how, if my life matters, or if what I'm doing is making any impact, if I can boil it down to serving some simple needs, and not in a way of me trying to take anything, but of me saying, I'm just going to be present, and I'm just going to be, I'm going to enter into this idea of what we would consider moving from sympathy to empathy to really into compassion. And compassion being this place where we're actually suffering with. And I've heard people talk, I've heard this example, which I think is a really good one. If you think about the sun, it's in a constant state of exploding. And it's also in a constant state of gravity trying to suck it all back in. And if either one of those wins, especially for our sun, life is over as we know it. But it's in the tension between these two things that actually flourishing is possible. And the sad reality is sometimes it feels a lot like tension, but there's also a security in knowing that we're holding these things in balance, that in this tension and this uncomfortableness in these spaces, which we may not ever want to be in, there's this tension, which actually is what I would consider a very holy thing.
Mike, I know we both have some feelings around this next question, most likely. But if I'm somebody on the other end, and I'm really thinking about starting something, you know,
yes,
we both have the giggles on that one. But I think years and years and years and years of people's best idea. When you're in this space, their best idea comes at you,
right?
Often. And so at some point you get maybe just a little bit hardened to everybody's best idea because they don't act on it, but if I'm somebody who's thinking about, gosh, I'm going to start, I'm going to lead, I'm going to get out there and stir people up in this space, which exactly, by the way, probably the way that I felt 11 years ago. And that seems like a really long life away. And I no apologies for that. I think I'm right where God wants me. However, there's been a lot of humbling in that and a lot of growth on my part. What would you say to the leader type person who's thinking about going out there, grabbing the world by the tail and sticking it in its pocket?
Yeah, I have a lot of things to say to you. I mean, not you, but or maybe to you, to that person, this hypothetical person.
I'm listening.
I think first and foremost, you have to prove to yourself why you should do it at all. And I think when people come to me and say, I'm thinking about starting this, or I want to do this, or I think this is a need, my first response is who else is doing it? The reality is there's probably not any new problems in the world. There's probably not people who aren't addressing those problems. There probably are models where people have tried to do things like you're maybe proposing. And if there's somebody else in the world that is doing that, or trying to push that kind of idea forward, then I feel like your first obligation is to join them. And there may be all kinds of real practical reasons why you can't. They're in California, or they're in Africa, or they're somewhere else, and so just physically it doesn't work. The second thing is I'm literally going to try to talk you out of it. And usually one of two things happened. Either this idea of what I would just boil down very black and white, it turns into pride. I'm going to start this, and it's not really about what I'm trying to do. It's actually about me and what I want it to show about me. And it's really hard and I've founded things, I've started things, those things have happened to me. I'm not talking as, I'm talking as someone who has looked in that mirror myself. You don't realize it and you don't see it. And so the desire to try to talk someone out of it is really to try to understand, in there? Is this about pride and kind of our own kingdom building? Or is this something that actually needs to be done and I can't be talked out of it because it's actually a need that needs to be done? And so I think I love talking to people who start things. I do. There nothing would be happening in the world if we didn't have people that did that. So it is a good thing. I think it's there's some ditches that people who start and found things can end up in very quickly. And Matt, you and I have many mutual friends who have started things and 5 years later, 10 years later, it kind of starts to unravel. There's some unraveling that takes place and things didn't quite turn out the way they thought it would. They couldn't solve the problem like they thought they would solve the problem. They didn't do it in a space of community. And so they're isolated, they're by themselves. And we've had the benefit of hindsight to see maybe, gosh, when I, 10 years ago, if I could tell myself some things about starting things and founding things and pushing new ideas in the world, there's some things that I should have listened to. And so I think it's incumbent upon anybody who's in that space of wanting to start something to go find someone who's been doing this for a while and just be open to the reality or to the questions that either you need to join them or you need to start something, or maybe what's actually being exposed is that this thing is something we may actually be using that may be about ourselves. And I know that may be very disheartening and that may not be super encouraging, but especially in the space of serving people, 10 years down the road of building an organization to programmatically care for people, if the leader finds himself in a space that cannot be sustained, where they have not been able to move the organization beyond themselves and that organization fails, the ramifications and the pain and turmoil that can be caused is tremendous. And so in the name of wanting to do something good in the world, we have an obligation to make sure that we don't become a part, not on purpose, but we do not become a part of actually creating cycles or systems that actually, or institutions, to go back to where we started, that actually are not capable of fulfilling the missions that we would hope that they would be able to fulfill.
Yeah, I love that. I think we just are consumed with a leader lust. Every book, church sermon thing out there can just put that leader on a pedestal. And we just love the idea of a leader. And, I've begun championing the follower, the person who shows up and is faithful and does it, like, pretty sure, get in line, go do that what that dude's doing. Don't do what I'm doing.
Because
of what you just said. So, well, thank you. Thank you for your heart and your time and for who you are. And I appreciate it. Thanks.
Matt, it's good. It's good to be able to sit with you. And just thanks for the example that you've been to my wife and my family and I, and you've opened our eyes to some things in this world that we naively would have never seen or never known. And our life is fuller and richer as a result of it. So it's a pleasure to sit and just process through it. I look forward to hopefully 10 years and decades, 20 years. I don't know if we'll live that long.
But. We'll do another podcast.
In 20 years? Okay, thanks.
Technology will move on. We'll do something.
Thanks, Matt. Mike.
Thanks so much to my friend Mike Rush for joining us on this One Thing series. You could find out more about things that Mike and I discussed at theatypicallife.com for show notes and links. This series, the One Thing series, is brought to you by 99 Balloons. 99 Balloons has a new sponsorship program they have launched to help children with disability in developing countries be able to attend school. You can find out more about how you can be involved in helping someone be included in a vital part of their community, just as Mike discussed today, at 99balloons.org/all-in, or just go to theatypicallife.com and we'll have the link there for you. As always, we love you. Thanks so much to my friend. No, 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 no.